You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my gun.
Get in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Hi listeners, Annie here for Showreel. Thanks for joining me this morning. 3CR's look at the Australian movie image practitioners and what they are making. And today we're looking at two more of the films playing at the upcoming Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. The festival starts online on July the 1st, so very soon, and it goes to the end of July. But it's in cinema at the Nova in Carlton from July the 7th to the 19th of July. Planet Sun is showing on opening night on the 7th of July at 6:30 p.m. I had a chat with one of the main drivers of the feature, Andy Evans.
Thanks very much for coming and having a chat with me about Planet Sun, because it's now going to be shown at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. Can you tell me a little bit about your film journey, you know, how you began making films before we get onto the film itself?
Yeah, look, my background more recently, the last 15 to 20 years, has been in renewable energy, particularly offshore wind farms. So, look, I was the co-founder of the main project here, the Star of the South, which will hopefully be built off the coast of Gippsland. We're about 14 years in. So, I got to the stage about 3 to 4 years ago that I was sick of standing up and bleating out the same message to everybody, doing what I could do, which is generally bring in big investments into new industries and new projects. So I just wanted a different way of conversing with everybody. So about 3.5 years ago, I decided what's a nice, easy, cheap way of conveying that message. Of course, filmmaking is the opposite of that, so it seemed like the perfect challenge. So I reached out to a friend who's in the film industry, put me onto a director who is Dominic Allen, who is the director of our first film, Planet Wind, which we made in 2000 and did all the filming in 2023 and had first screenings and festivals in 2024. Including the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, which we were the Audience Choice Award winner in. And at that stage, I think we really enjoyed the messaging and always knew I didn't want to do a one-off film. And because I'm in renewables, look, I am big on the generation side, like the wind, the sun, but I knew that you couldn't go out there and make an engineering or science or climate disaster-based film. Look, for me, it doesn't really resonate or move the dial. So I wanted to have something where we were trying to have everyone understand that, you know, when we talk about wind power and sun power and solar, we're actually talking about where it emanates from, not the technology, and whether you like a wind turbine or a solar panel or not. Look, let's focus on what actually generates all this opportunity. So we really looked at, you know, Planet Wind to start with. That was a lot around my personal journey with offshore wind because it was new and it was made more to target the Australian government initially, who have been generally good supporters, to sort of get that message through, but then it became a global story. So I really wanted to sort of cut through renewables as being the outcome of what we wanted people to align with, but do it in a more subliminal way where we have it as more the human stories involved, which for me, having been in the industry, it's about the jobs, investment, regional development, generations of families being able to have opportunities together and live in the same area. And also, obviously, the decarbonisation and lesser impact on the world. So we've done it very much as a human's relationship with these planetary forces, the first one being wind and the second one being sun. And look, the great thing about that is you could make a more all-ages film because we're talking also about how great the planet is. So much in a very poor man's David Attenborough sort of way, we're focusing on, you know, specifics, whether that's types of wildlife or the like, but also highlighting what a great planet we live on. And hopefully making it semi-inspirational, particularly for younger people looking at what they want to do in the world to see, wow, there's these great opportunities out there that have been provided to us. There is a future. There are jobs. It is global. With both films, we go to 10 countries. and speak to locals, whether that be more industry-based or Planet Sun is very much more community and regional-based.
Yeah, you do. You go to a whole lot of different places, but you also go there with the intention of talking to people who have a conscious connection culturally with the sun, which is fascinating, actually.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a couple of, we've only had a few screenings, and that's why I'm excited about the Documentary Film Festival, is that we've really held back on this one. I think the first one, it was my first film. So it was like a real cathartic release. So I was just keen to get it out in the world as much as I could. And I had a natural industry which was developing. In my little industry, it's my name's recognisable around the world. We've taken the film to about 9 countries. We're in about 8 festivals for Planet Wind, Planet Sun, a similar sort of journey. But I really want to hit to the homes, the families, the everybody out there, more as a human story rather than an industry. So the countries like Madagascar, we found it really resonated. The story there is great. We talk about an energy transition here, and Kalina, one of the ladies from Solar United, just had a great line. It's like, people talk about energy transition. We're talking about first-time energy users here. Being on the ground, like, it was actually, it was a really humbling experience. I had no idea how poor Madagascar was. It's the third poorest country in the world. It's almost like ground zero for a lot of things. But just beautiful people, doing the best they can with what they've got, and just the smiles on the kids' faces, getting something as simple as a light that they can put on at home, really makes you sort of sit back and think. And you come back to our beautiful developed countries and you look at all the complaining we do make about things that we just absolutely take for granted.
Which I suppose is partially the strength of the film, because I mean, it was fascinating to become acquainted with people from other places, like the fellow from Mexico, who's so incredibly enthusiastic about his find, and then describing the culture of the Maya. So getting it all in line so that we have a better understanding of our place in the human story, effectively. One, how did you find the people to talk to, and why did you choose the countries that you went to?
Yeah, we're really lucky. We've got a great production team. So we're a small crew. We usually about 5 of us fly around the world filming, but we've got a script writer, a score composer as well. The director and the production manager, they do incredible sourcing. I think for this story, Planet Sun was much easier than Planet Wind. Planet Wind was a lot more, how does the industry develop? This one was more about every nation has got a sun story. So we really wanted to traverse the planet. I was sort of wary with the first film. It was very much based on countries that were built up enough to have offshore wind. Because they're such large projects, you need detailed infrastructure and investment market and the like. This one, we were just keen to get all around the world. There were a couple of really obvious stories. Stonehenge was a bit of the cornerstone. And I was lucky that director Dom really wanted to start in the dark, because it's very easy to think of the sun as just this blazing ball of light and heat. But for people who don't live with the sun that much, that was a really interesting story.
The Finnish story, yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, look, I was going to say, Annie, it was pretty cool filming it as well.
I was watching it, I was thinking, oh, wow, you got to go to all these great places. And I've actually been to Newgrange and I've been into that place. Oh, it's so mind-blowing, that place.
Well, just the story as well, how they think, you know, the shaping of it, look, it may have been designed by the female based on the shape of the ovaries and the like. It's just like there's a great line when we finish up in Finland, when I look out the window, I mean, about, you know, where you're questioning whether it will actually come up the next day and what is this thing. You look at, you know, design of Newgrange, it's like they're piecing together discovery of themselves, discovery of the world, and trying to work out how it all fits together. Yeah, look, I mean, well, the Finnish bit was pretty cool, because I mean, we did the snowmobiles. It was about 11:30 on a Saturday night on a frozen lake. So you sort of meet at 11 o'clock and you're out there, and it's just like, what are we doing? Like, that was just over the Arctic Circle. So we were
so that time in that world that people are in the dark, time has a different meaning.
Yeah, totally. Like with the deer herder, which I always laugh at, you know, speaking to a deer herder, it sounds so foreign to us. You know, he was very, very much talking about with the reindeer, they can't survive on their own for about 8 months of the year, because if they can't, because the snow covers up all the berries and the food, they don't know where to find it. So they usually roam free between, it's more mid-April through to the end of sort of September. But it's like March. He talks about the season of the March. That's just when, you know, they can just sort of find their own food, and they're out there and their antlers, you know, redevelop as well. Yeah, look, it was a really different place. Look, and every country was fascinating. Look, I really found the intellectual story of Hawaii was amazing, where we had the giant telescopes. Got a really good 2 to 3 minute historical sequence there, where we go through the ancient Greeks and Romans and the like to track for everybody, what this blazing sun actually meant to all the different, times of civilization. It's funny, I actually felt a bit more like a professional tennis player in this one, because you literally fly to a place, do all your work, rehearse everything, and then you pack up and go straight on. So whereas the first film I had a little bit more time and I knew a lot more people, I could stop and do some things on the way. This one was really, because we had to cover so much of the globe in a relatively short time, and it's very expensive. Dominic and I have self-funded these first two films because we were too impetuous. It was really about minimizing or maximizing costs, efficiency and value. But
You take the role of us, the viewer, in an intrepid sort of Tintin way. You're going around the world to find out more things, and we go with you.
yeah, I mean, the good thing, anyway, being like, look, I mean, initially with the first film, I wasn't going to be the narrator or the on-screen talent. But then it became apparent from the first film. Look, I mean, I was a lawyer years ago. I'd done so much public speaking and through sport and the like. So I'm super passionate about what I'm doing. So it came through from the first film. I had to screen test for my own film that, I was probably the best person, particularly for Planet Wind and Planet Sun. Look, I'm a developing sort of on-screen sort of talent, but I suppose the benefit I've got is I actually really love people. A lot of the interviews would start with probably about 20 questions that I'd get probably an hour before I'd do the interview. I'd always done a bit of research on every person and everything, and then it just became a natural conversation. The Mexican ones were pretty hard because all the speaking was done in Spanish, and I don't speak Spanish. So yeah, with yeah, but look, it was great. We sort of built a great bond with most people. And look, most people are fascinated that they are Australian documentary makers with a background in renewables who actually want to come and meet you wherever you are in the world. So, I mean, that's a credit to the production team, like Dom and Margarita, who really managed that. We would land in places and everyone would roll out the red carpet, and having done a film previously, which we could send on, people would say, okay, we're actually serious about this. I really aim for cinematic values on this, on these films, because, oh, look, if you just seek to make a nature or an alarmist content, look, people just don't want to hear. We live in a world where facts aren't facts and science isn't science. So you've got to convey things in a different way. And look, even the first film, Planet Wind, was closer to 2 hours. This one is a hard 90 minutes. Just being able to capture, the attention of people is a real challenge. Like getting people to cinemas is a challenge, but also getting that message through, because look, we've aimed to make this pretty different. Like we sort of deal with something that realistically is about renewable energy and climate, but we know we're in Cannes 2 years ago at the festival. We showed the film there and we met everyone. It's a massive, it's more like a massive conference, really, Cannes, rather than the red carpet. And we met with a few of the climate distributors. And I had to say to them, they were like, well, we don't get enough science come through. And I had to say, look, to be fair, a lot of the current films you look at, they are more climate alarmism. They make our job really hard. Like we're the ones out there trying to get the energy transition and have the climate impacts more than anybody through renewables. But going out with climate alarmism, like you just, it's like a year 10 school dance. You automatically have people on either side of the room. So you've got to bring, we want people to feel happy, positive about our planet. We want people to sit there with their children, with whoever, and say, wow, we do live in a great planet. We've always used the sun and these natural resources throughout history. Why don't we use it for a newer purpose? It's not controversial.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're with Annie on Showreel and we're chatting with two of the filmmakers who are featured in this year's Melbourne Documentary Film Festival in cinema, starting July the 7th at the Cinema Nova in Carlton. Matt Love's film, Bleeding the Demon, is about his personal deliverance from obesity, anxiety and a depressive state, and will be screened as part of a session focusing on films on health. And it's on Wednesday, the 8th of July, starting at 5:50 p.m. There's a series of health shorts, and it's coupled with the UK leading alcohol-free advocate Andy Rummage's film, Going Dry. Here's my chat with first-time filmmaker Matt Love. Congratulations on your film, Matt. Now, of course, Bleeding the Demon almost sounded like it was a horror film, but it was a personal horror film, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Considering it's a life journey about you coming out of a situation that was really difficult, well, people have to see the film, but and you can talk about it, but how did you come to filmmaking? Because that's not where you first began, is it?
No, not at all. I'm not from a filmmaker background at all. I'm just a school bus driver that had a story to tell, and something coming through was telling me to do it. And I think from just, you know, I can't really explain why, but it was always in there, something telling me to do it. And I think it was built off the hope, you know, that maybe I could help someone and show them that at the end of the day, as deep and as dark as where I was, to turn around and to get, you know, get where I got and where I am now, I just wanted to show it. And I thought maybe I'll get a camera and I'll have a go and I'll write some stuff down and I'll see what I can do. And that's where it really stemmed from at the very beginning. So yeah.
Well, you're the writer and the producer, and the film uses a lot of scripting to be able to lead us as viewers through your drama. It's quite complicated but very clear scripting. So tell me, you're a good writer. You've done a good job. So tell me about that.
Well, that's kind of funny because this is the bizarre thing. There was no script for any of this. I started off with, I guess, a folder or a book, which I thought in the very beginnings, I didn't really know what I was going to make. I didn't know how I was going to make it. And I had a folder. It was full of writings and ideas, pictures. I was going to have people on it. I thought I might do this, I might do that. And in the end, I didn't use any of it. I didn't even open the book. And I just sat in front of my computer for maybe days and thought, where am I going to start with this? What am I going to do? I did have initial campfire footage where I sort of tell the story, the bulk of it. So I had that and I just would sit there and I'd sort of flick through and I didn't know what I was doing. And then eventually I just got in this flow state and just started editing bits and pieces to like the story. And that's all it was. They're obviously voiceovers, yes, they're scripted. I'd have writings that I'd write down or whatever. But other than that, there was no script. There was no formula. It just poured out of me. And that was a bizarre thing at the very end when I watched it back, or as I was watching it, I'm like, this is becoming something. And the way it happened, it was a weird thing. It just formed and it just poured out. It was like a healing, I guess you could say. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
By the end of it, I was interested in how you shot it. And I said, was it your relative who shot it for you, your brother? Or
yeah, it was my brother. My brother had so I went to him and he's got some camera gear and he just set up a tripod and some sound things. I don't really know exactly what he was using or what he did, but he'd set up this set all that up for me. And yeah,
the reason why I'm putting it to you is that it's incredibly heartfelt, and the testimony effectively that you give to camera and your friend gives to camera as well is incredibly honest. And for a moment I thought you just set up a camera and was talking to the camera, but actually it made much more sense that you were talking to somebody who was a trusted individual.
Well, yeah, I did. What your first thought is correct. I was talking to a broomstick, but my brother was just off to the right. So every now and then, you know, it took me 5-10 minutes. I'd sit there and hum and ha and not really know where to go or what to do with it. And then he'd prompt me, or he'd ask me a question and I'd think about it and then off I'd go. And once I got going, it just flowed out. It was 3.5 hours of talking. So that was reduced down to maybe 15-17 minutes in total,
And now the next thing, of course, is that you use animation and you use some really delightful cartoon character type people or to illustrate your feelings. Where did they come from? They were really quite dramatic.
So yeah, I wanted to use like the Mickey Mouse or vintage style or like Popeye, that sort of imagery. So what I did was I sort of drew a rough sketch of what I wanted to use, and then what I would do is I took a photo of it, and then I just used AI and to produce for each emotion, I would say, this is I'd read it my voice over for that section and say exactly what I'd want to do, and it would produce rough versions, and I'd come in and out, and that's basically what they were.
That was really interesting, as well as the animation, the
The
monster.
animation that was made, yeah, no, that was made by I used someone to build that for me. I don't exactly know how or what they did, but I enlisted someone to create that little, it was maybe a minute and a half snippet that I had, and that's been edited down into what it is, yeah.
As
So
well as
it came
the,
out good, yeah.
no, it came up really well. And the other thing that's really interesting, because there's a lot of clarity in this film, the early stuff with the little kid. I mean, that was terribly moving and quite dramatic just to watch, I'll have to say. How did you get that piece put together? The little child and the reenactment and stuff like that. How did that come
Yep.
about? Because it was very effective.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, I had someone, I reached out to someone to, it's, they've just created it using, I don't know exactly what they've done, to be honest. I just enlisted someone to make like and the animation, that was part of the animation as well. So that was all one piece, but it had been split up. So the little boy, it was just a representation of myself when I was a kid. So on the bus, that's all, I gave him a criteria of what I wanted, and then they put it all together for me.
Oh,
So
wow,
yeah,
that's really
kind of out like
fascinating.
that.
That's quite fascinating.
Yeah.
All
Yeah, so
right.
I gave him a detailed brief of what I wanted and just went over it and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And yeah, that's what we come up with. And it's been split up and I've removed sections out of it that just didn't suit it as I thought, oh, this would work well. But yeah, so it's been a little bit condensed, but I could still use what I was given, and it worked well, I think, just taking sections out and using it, placing it around a story.
Well, it did work really well. The other thing was the use of old photos. You inserted those into the overall script as
Yeah.
well, which is interesting.
Yeah, I had a thought, like, because I knew, like, to try and tell my story and to get an idea of, I guess, that progressive, I guess it was based around my weight as a kid, and the progressiveness of it, to see like just how you could just, I knew if I showed all those pictures, you would get an idea of how things were for me. And as it went through, you could just visibly see it. And I knew all through life, all my high school, primary school photos. Yeah, it was never something I'd ever be proud of or ever want to be part of either. But just to have them in there, it just gives you a good idea, of where I was and how I sort of grew through that. Put them up there.
So you did the editing.
I did everything other than sound design at the end. I had a Michael Pritchard, who's my cousin, and he did the sound design, like the mastering, and done his magic there, whatever he does. I'm not across this stuff very well. I just basically brought a computer, had an idea, and I got going. I downloaded Premiere Pro and I started to slowly to work through that. And just, yeah, that's how it came about.
Well, you see, the key to telling a good story on film, you're making it quite clear, is actually, well, one, passion, but it's also being able to tell a story in a visual way and in a chronological way, which is what you are quite clearly are capable of doing. That's what you've done. I mean,
Yeah.
so all the technical supports is one thing, but being able to actually tell a story is another. And you do it, not everybody can do that. So quite clearly, you're a bit of a storyteller.
Yeah, I guess. I don't even know if that's the case, but it's clearly it comes across that way. But I just think it was I keep coming back to like it just something that flew through me or come out of me. Yeah, it's a very hard thing to, yeah, I guess. All right, yeah, I'm a good storyteller, I guess. But
no, you got to no, take the compliments where they're due.
Yeah, no, I definitely take it. But yeah, I don't look at myself as like either a filmmaker or a storyteller. I just had a story within me that poured out, and the way it came out, it just flew, it came out of me like that. So I don't even think of it that. Yeah, I just that's what I say when I. Before, when I was saying that's a bit of a bizarre thing to when I look at this at the very end and watch it from start to finish, the way it flows, the how good the story kind of explains and evolves through it. And yeah, it's a bizarre thing for me to watch that back and just think, I at the end of it, I go, how did I even get here? How did that even happen? Because it's weird. I don't even remember doing it in a way. It's a very strange thing. So,
because when you're telling a story and you've got your elements, you have to make decisions about how they're going to flow together. And that's why when you say, the guy gave me these elements and then I wanted it to fit into the, you know, like it's like a piece of furniture. I wanted it to fit into that hole. And so you worked out how to make it fit. And they are actually the decisions that a storyteller does. They make those decisions.
Yeah.
And you've done that quite successfully in this film. It's got a lot of impact, this film. When did you decide you were going to send it to the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival? And you want, because you obviously want people to understand your journey.
Yeah, well, I was never going to send it anywhere, really. At the end of the day, I just kind of built it for, initially was for my daughters to see the story, I guess, because they'd gone through a lot growing up with me. And I wanted them to understand that, you know, why it was so rough and tough through those times, that I, what, you know, that there was a lot more behind it so that they could understand it. So I'd that's initially what it was for. And then I think it was my brother, Brennan, who said, oh, why don't you put this in a film festival? I was like, oh yeah, what's that? Like, I don't know the world. I don't know any of this stuff. And he explained. And I said, oh, all right, yeah, let's have a go. And that's pretty much how that was. It was a suggestion, and I thought, all right. And I do want to help people, and I think there is something in it that a lot of people can find or get out of it. So why not? You know, when I was very stuck and down and broken, all I wanted was maybe a bit of help, or I could never seem to find anything that would help in a way that was meaningful, or to lift up, or to find hope in something. Nothing very meaningful. And so, yeah, I thought, yep, let's, why not put this out there? It's quite terrifying. It's raw and it's honest. But, yeah, I think I can help someone with it now that I've sat back and looked at it, you know, from start to finish and realised, yeah, there's something in it. And, yeah, that's when Brendan's like, do you want to look at a film festival, and I started looking them up, and yeah, that's it. That's how it went.
That's it for Showreel this week. If you would like a couple of tickets to Planet Sun, we have two double passes for the July 7th Nova screening. It's 6:30. Just ring 3CR on 94198377 and tell them that's what you're ringing for. Coming up next is Published or Not.
If you knew that you would die today, you saw the face of God and love, would you change? Would you change? If you knew that love can't break your heart, when you're down so low you cannot fall, would you change? Would you change? How bad, how good does it need to get? How many losses, how much regret? What chain reaction would cause an effect? Makes you turn around, makes you try to explain. makes you forgive and forget, makes you change.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.